Welcome everyone to a special edition of Double M Live. You got Mike Nice in the building. I am Marv Izzon. This is another special edition of Double M Live, playoff edition. We're here to talk some NBA awards, talk some Celtics expectations. But once again, this is Double M Live, and we are brought to you by Bet Online AG. Mike Nice, what's happening, bro?
Say, it's been a long NBA season. Thankfully, they got through it without any wild interruptions that we saw from the previous season, previous two seasons.
True.
And we made it to the end, and now playoffs is right around the corner. You know, our home team, the Celtics, are in the playoffs. Thankfully, it was looking kind of slow to start the year, but they in there, number two seed. And, you know, it's been a solid season all around for the Celtics with a huge turnaround. Interesting basketball to watch from just across the league. So we're going to dive all into that as we go through this special edition here at Double M. I can't wait to do it.
For sure, man. And before we even get started, if you are watching this right now, we are recording April 11th on a Monday evening. But April 15th, Mike Nice and I are celebrating our 100th episode of Double M. Our 100th episode of Double M. And we want you guys to be there. If you have not bought in tickets already, there might be some tickets left by the time you watch this. I don't know, but there might be some tickets left. Go on the Double M IG and go hit the link in the bio. Buy some tickets. It's going to be live audience, a celebration, a turn up, good conversation. We got DJ H as our guest. We got our EP, Sam, hosting the show with our show, our new co-host of a show called Kiki with Key. She's going to be hosting with Sam as well. So it's going to be crazy, man. It's going to be a special time. Anything to add, Mike? It's about to be nuts, bro.
Hey, man, 100 episodes. You know, shout out to people who have tuned in, watching and listening, who've been rocking with us from the beginning. It's been a long time. We've been putting in work. We've been grinding. And we've reached episode 100 coming up. Like Marv said, April 15th. My head's all over. April 15th is going down, which is Friday. You know, if you got your tickets, can't wait to see you. If you have yet to grab your tickets, there might be a few left. Go do that. Go grab them because we want to celebrate with you. You know how we do. It's an interactive show. Not only will Marv and I be holding it down, but we're definitely doing interaction with the live audience that will be in attendance. So can't wait to hear from you. Can't wait to see you. Can't wait to celebrate with you. It's going to be a hell of a time. Can't wait.
Yeah, man. And Mike Nice, I just wanted to give you your flowers, man. You guys had a hell of a show, episode 99 with James Stewart. Talking about the WWE. Dope episode. If you guys have not seen that, definitely go watch that. If you are a wrestling head, you know, WrestleMania had just passed, but they talk about so much more and beyond. And someone who was a big fan of wrestling, it was an enjoyable show. So I definitely recommend everyone to go check out episode 99 with our brother Cool Sam and James Stewart.
Appreciate it, man. Like you said, James Stewart blessed us with a great show. Sam stepped in and held it down, man. It was a great show just to, you know, reminisce about a lot of wrestling things and have conversation about stuff from the past, stuff from the present. James Stewart is very knowledgeable when it comes to everything wrestling. You know, he talked about things that I wasn't even hip to. So I just enjoyed hearing his knowledge and his thoughts and opinions on different stuff. It's a great show. Definitely check it out. Episode 99 out now everywhere. So
yeah, man. I got beef that y'all didn't have Undertaker in the Mount Rushmore, but that's a conversation for another time. I'm not happy about that at all. And let's move on, man. Let's do this NBA talk, bro. This has been an amazing season, in my opinion. I think this has been a great season overall. Maybe I'm saying that because the Celtics have turned things around, but there's been a lot of unpredictable things that's happened this year. And I think that's what's going to make for a great show, because I don't think we're going to be in line with each other with a lot of things when we give out these awards, our double MBA awards. And, you know, we might have a little debate here and there. Feel like, you know, sometimes you and me, Mike, we are aligned with most things. And we're going to see where we are this year with some of the MBA awards that get given out and hearing our explanation, man. So let's not, you know, waste any time, brother. Coach of the year. I think we already even had this conversation on Twitter. We had a little back and forth on Twitter on who should be the NBA coach of the year. The floor is yours, bro.
It's tough, man. It's tough when we talk about coach of the year because, you know, there's guys that are definitely deserving of the award. There's three guys definitely, absolutely, positively deserving of the award. There's the head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies.
Jenkins.
Jenkins, yes.
Respect on his name.
There's the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, Monty Williams. Yep. And then there's the head coach of the Boston Celtics, Ime Udoka. And, I mean, you can make a solid case for each one of those coaches. Here's what I'll say. Monty Williams, easy argument. That team ran away with the league, 60-something wins, 60-plus wins on the season. I think the next team has maybe 55, 56. But the Suns ran away with the league. Even that time period where Chris Paul was out,
Don't be using my argument now.
My fault? Don't worry. You'll see where I'm going with it. Even with Chris Paul out, they still had a hell of a run. But my thing with Monty Williams, Phoenix Suns was solid last year. Now, last year, it was unexpected for them to be that good, but they still were a solid team last year. Jenkins, who would ever have guessed that the Memphis Grizzlies, a young Memphis Grizzlies team, would be the second seed in the West? Like, no one saw that coming at all. But call me a homer, whatever you want to call me. I don't care. I feel as if Ime Udoka has a great case, great argument to be the coach of the year for this season. Rookie head coach, that's something Jenkins and Monty Williams are not. And he started off the year. There was a good chunk of time where people were tired of Udoka and said, maybe this was the wrong decision. Maybe they chose the wrong guy. Maybe he could go. I don't even care if it's been a month into the season. He can go.
We've had that conversation.
Oh, here. Absolutely. Because things were ugly for the Celtics. Things were ugly for the Celtics for the first half. And you thought, okay, this rookie head coach is over his head. It's not working out right now. And, you know, the arguments and the conversations were there if this was it was it a wrong choice that Brad Stevens made. But the turnaround that Udoka had with this team has been incredible. Going from, you know, not even in the playoffs, not even in the play-in. I think Celtics were as far down as 12th as 11th seed. 11th seed. To be able to have a short period of time where you made it to the number one seed in the East just based off of that turnaround. I think the fact that he was a rookie head coach and he was able to accomplish all that he did this season and just the big turnaround by itself, I have to give the nod to Ime for coach of the year this season.
Ime Udoka as the MVP coach of the year. Look, when during the season, there's people calling for you to get fired. There's people telling you you got to go. I think that already eliminates you from the coach of the year aspect. Because we got to look at it as a whole grand scheme.
From start to finish.
We got to look at it start to finish, in my opinion, when you talk about coach of the year. He's coach of the half of the year. Because that's when the Celtics turned up, half of the year. Udoka, what he's done is amazing. The team has bought in, and he's going to be a hell of a coach, I believe. I think he's proven that. But when you talk about coach of the year, I'm looking at the whole season and a team that never dipped off once. It has to go to Monty Williams. that team has 64 wins. They've lost Chris Paul for a chunk of the season. Never lost a beat. They lost Devin Booker for a chunk of the season. Never lost a beat. Like, that's very impressive. That's coaching right there. Monty Williams is the coach of the year. And, you know, before, for some reason, like you mentioned it, last year they were a shock. They were a surprising team. And Monty didn't even win the coach of the year that year. It was Tom Thibodeau. You know, we thought for a second it was Tom Thibodeau who won coach of the year last year. Monty Williams deserves his damn flowers. He deserves coach of the year. He coached the best team. He's not coaching a super team with superstars. Devin Booker deserves to be in the MVP talks. At one point, Chris Paul was in the MVP talks. The way this team is constructed and the way they play defense. We talk about the Celtics and what they've been doing for half the year and how amazing it is. The Suns have been doing it from day one. You can honestly say the Suns have been doing it for 2 years straight now. It's incredible. And I don't think we should knock a coach down because he's been great for 2 years. So I think Monty's number one. You mentioned Taylor Jenkins. I want to give it to him bad. Mike, you know this, and some people who watch the show may know this. I'm a Memphis fan. I love the Grizzlies. And what the Grizzlies have done is incredible. Like, it's to the point that people are not even talking about it enough, how this team is second seed in the Western Conference. They were fighting for the play-in last year. Ja Morant has taken another step, a guy we're going to talk about later. He's taken another step. The team without Ja has been winning incredibly. Like, Taylor Jenkins too. So here's my board. Goes Monty, Taylor Jenkins, and the field. I know Ime, being a Boston fan, I love what he's done, but I just can't put a guy coach of the year for half a year turnaround. If you want to say he's coach of the year because of the turnaround, I mean, I get it. I mean, that's the only reason why he'd be in the discussion. I'm not mad at the pick. I respect it. But I just can't put him over the two that I have there. And then another, I have someone else I would put over Tyronn Lue.
Clippers, huh?
I like what Tyronn Lue, I think he's put himself in that category of, oh yeah, this guy's a hell of a coach. Lakers effed up because they didn't want to give him enough money. And I bet you the Lakers are kicking themselves right now for not having Tyronn Lue there. Tyronn Lue, what he's done with this Clippers team, I think is pretty impressive. No Kawhi, no Paul George, and they're there. If it wasn't for a damn play-in tournament, they're in the playoffs. So I think Tyronn Lue deserves his credit as well.
What about this guy? Doesn't get talked about enough, but I think he's had a solid year with everything that happened with his team. Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd is a hell of a coach. Jason Kidd,
that lost Porzingis and still were able to be, what are they, third, fourth seed in the West?
Third seed. Yo, Jason Kidd's a hell of a coach. Like, what he's done defensive, what he does with his team defensively, like, even when I was watching him play the Celtics on KG's reunion, he understands defense. And then, like, how he took out Tatum in the following game, he took out KD. It's incredible how he does his defensive schemes. I think Jason Kidd should be in the conversation. Well, I'm glad you brought him up. Jason Kidd is a hell of a coach, yo.
Yeah, he doesn't get talked about enough, but, you know, like I said, that team started the year. You're thinking they're going through the year with, you know, Doncic and Porzingis carrying the load through the season. Then they say, you know what, it's not working out with Porzingis here. And he had already, rumors had swirled that he didn't like being over there and being the second fiddle.
Dummy.
Which didn't make sense to me, but they got rid of him, and they still managed. And I don't even – did they get anything crazy back from Washington?
They got Dinwiddie.
Dinwiddie. Maybe a draft pick or something. I don't know. But they got back Dinwiddie, who wasn't having a great year at all in Washington. But they were still able to have a solid second half of the NBA season and be the third seed. So, yeah, I think Jason Kidd needs to get looked at as well for sure.
Definitely. Let's move on with the sixth man of the year, Mike. I think this one is probably, out of all the awards, very clear cut winner on who the sixth man of the year is. But I'm gonna let you take it and hear what you got to say.
Yeah, I think this one's easy. I think this one's pretty universal. I think the sixth man of the year in the NBA should be Tyler Hero from the Miami Heat. And I know personally, because I had Tyler Hero on maybe three fantasy leagues. I probably had him on two of my teams. Tyler Hero averaging 20 points off the bench for the Heat, shooting lights out. Like, he wasn't just scoring 20, like a lights out sniper off the bench for the Miami Heat. I always thought that the Heat team was scary coming into the season, especially adding a veteran point guard like Kyle Lowry. But obviously had, you know, Bam and Butler there. You add Lowry. They still had Duncan Robinson, who was their other sniper. But, you know, Tyler Hero, and this is, I think, his third season.
Yep.
So his first is rookie season, you know, all right, so-so. He really showed out in the bubble. Celtics fans know that really well. His sophomore year was very underwhelming. He wasn't anything crazy. I think he took a step back from what he was doing his rookie season.
The Heat season in general, that second half was just underwhelming.
Yeah, very underwhelming season for the Heat overall. But yeah, Tyler Hero individually took a step back. But you know, the whole Heat team kind of re-upped this current season, adding PJ Tucker, adding Kyle Lowry. They came back with a resurgence in terms of energy and what their identity was. And in the midst of that, Tyler Hero said, yeah, this season I'm a really show out. And showing out is exactly what he's been doing from start to finish. I don't know who necessarily they're starting over him in Miami. I know Lowry starts, Butler starts, I believe Duncan starts. But Duncan, PJ Tucker, Duncan, and Bam.
I think Duncan just got demoted, to be honest.
Okay, so they might be starting Strauss.
Yeah, he's been struggling.
Or they have one of them, their Martin twins, I believe, over there as well, who's been getting some burn. But Tyler Hero's been locked into that six-man role. And every time he comes into the bench, like I said, I have him on my fantasy team, so I saw it firsthand. Automatic 20 points with like maybe three or four three-pointers. And what more can you ask from your six-man? You have a six-man on your team. You're asking him to come in and give you a scoring punch for the most part. And that's exactly what Tyler Hero did, from better than any other six-man in the league, I believe. So I think it's pretty universal that Tyler Hero should be the sixth man of the year.
Yeah, I'm not going to make this long. It's Tyler Hero. I think you can give honorable mention to Cam Johnson from the Phoenix Suns. I think he's been having a great he's been a great sixth man for the Phoenix Suns. But Tyler Hero has taken it after having a sophomore slump. Third year, really found his role as the sixth man. He could easily be a starter for a lot of teams. So shout out to Tyler Hero, definitely a sixth man. Don't think we need to tackle much into that.
Nah.
Moving on to, let's do Rookie of the Year. Rookie of the Year is an interesting
one. That's a good one. That's a good one.
I was telling you this, Mike, out off the show. This is a crazy class. I don't think, like, this class right here, I honestly think could go toe-to-toe. I mean, I think 96 class might be 96 class and the 80 was Jordan's class, 83?
83, yep.
96 class and 83 are the best two classes in the NBA. This class is going to be up there. There's a lot of special talent in this class right here. And there's not a Kobe Bryant. There's not a Michael Jordan in this class. But there's a lot of all-stars, future all-stars in this class. A lot of players that are going to be big for winning teams. And I'm just enjoying all of these rookies, man. I'm enjoying every rookie that's been playing and what they're becoming. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play out. Rookie of the year. I'll start off with this one.
Go ahead, because I'm still struggling
by what I've been seeing from Evan Mobley. But this guy, Scottie Barnes. Scottie Barnes. He's an important part for the Toronto Raptors, and he's been playing. I think injury might give Barnes the edge here. Defensively, he's guarded the best players in the league as a rookie. Defensively, he gets the hardest assignments. He gets the Tatums. He gets the Kevin Durant, and he's playing hard. And then he's also becoming a huge contributor offensively. The Toronto Raptors started off the season without Pascal Siakam playing, so which put a big focus on Scottie Barnes to be a scorer, which he wasn't known to be. And he's also a distributor. He plays defense. I love his game. I was not expecting his game to be this, but it's incredible. I think Scottie Barnes is going to be my rookie of the year. But it's very close.
Yeah, it's very close. And while you was talking, again, I was torn between Scottie Barnes and Evan Mobley as well. I think what it boils down to is what I'm seeing here from just looking up stats. Scottie Barnes played 74 games this season. Mobley played 69. So the numbers in terms of game played aren't too far off. But here's my thing with Scottie Barnes. He has the potential. And how tall is this dude? I think he's like 6'8".
Yeah.
Something like that. Scottie Barnes has the potential to be like an all-around threat type of player in this league. He can score. He can rebound. And he has solid court vision where he can move the ball around and get different people involved. That's the type of player most teams are looking for. Somebody who can be and do a little bit of everything. Who wouldn't want someone like that? And that's what Scottie Barnes is doing as a rookie in this league. The race is very close. It's a very close race. Thing with rookie, you have years where there's a rookie who just completely runs away with it and it's not even close. And then you have years where, like, okay, we got two players or two or three, maybe sometimes four players who can be in the conversation. And this is a year where you got two guys who are easily up there that, it's not going to be in any type of unanimous decision or anything like that at all. People definitely like what Scottie Barnes has done. People definitely like what Evan Mobley has done. Bring it back to fantasy again. I had both of those guys on my teams. And I took a chance in drafting both of them because, you never know. Sometimes rookies show out. And I drafted two rookies that really showed out for their teams this season, Scottie Barnes and Evan Mobley, and I'm thankful for what they brought to the table. But, yeah, just because of games played and being available for his team and the fact that I believe Scottie Barnes is more of an all-around player who can do multiple things, I'm rolling with Scottie Barnes for Rookie of the Year this season. We lost you, Marv. I don't know what happened. Yeah, I don't know.
Lost me. I'm back. I'm back.
You're back now. You're back. Yep.
I was just saying, Cade Cunningham, another player. Amazing.
Came on late, though.
Came on late, but you can see why he was drafted number one. Like, he has it. You got other guys like Jalen Green. He's been putting on a show this last week in the NBA.
Coming on late, too. Just too late.
Josh Giddey. He's a special player. I think Kumanga and Warriors. He's a nice player. The fact that the Warriors were able to get him at the number 7 pick, that's huge. Kumanga's going to be good. I like how they have Moses Moody, too. Who else? Chris Duarte from the Pacers. He's nice. Trey Mann, you remember Trey Mann dropped like almost 30
points against the Celtics. Yeah,
he's a special player. Like this draft is crazy, man. It's a crazy draft here. So I'm looking forward to seeing these young guys flourish moving forward. So we both have Scotty Barnes, Mike. So we two for two, man. We got two guys that we
both got Scotty Barnes.
Here we go. Here's where it gets interesting.
We doing most improved defensive player.
All right. Yeah, let's not go. Let me not go there then. Let's do most improved.
All right.
Let's do most improved.
I wonder if we're on the same page here. I don't know.
Most improved is tough. Because if we're going by who really was the most improved, it was Ja Morant. But I don't really like giving the award to a player that's or trajectory was always going to go up anyways. You know what I'm saying? Most improved player really goes to someone who you didn't really see coming or it had a rough couple of years. Ja Morant, you kind of knew that he was going to be special. We didn't know he was going to be this special, but you knew he was going to be a special player.
And that's the argument right there for him. But I'll let you continue. Go ahead.
But that's the thing. So, like, if it should be Ja Morant. It should be him. But I think I'm going to give it to Darius Garland. Darius Garland, a player who had high hopes going into Cleveland. They put him in a situation where he had to, you know, trade off with Colin Sexton for a couple of times. Had a rough rookie year. Sophomore year, start to pick it up a little bit, but really exploded and became his own this year. Became an all-star, leading the Cleveland Cavaliers to the playoffs. We'll play in now. The Cavs have dipped off a little bit, but due to the fact because Mobley hasn't been playing, and the teams just know just to load up on Garland because he's the only weapon, and you can stop the Cavs now. But I think Garland has been really special. He's pretty much a 20-10 guy. It reminds me a lot of the way Steve Nash plays, gets his team involved. I'll give it to Darius Garland. But if we're really talking about who improved, who took the biggest jump, it was Ja Morant.
So Darius Garland is definitely a good one. Another name that could be thrown in there as well, Jordan Poole.
Yes, I saw Draymond giving a good push for him.
And he certainly deserved it. While Klay missed a lot of the season, and even Curry missing some of the season. I mean, Draymond missed some of the season too. Jordan Poole, when given the time and opportunity, has been a consistent player for them.
He's
putting
tough.
Up buckets, getting points and whatnot. So I definitely throw Jordan Poole in there. But yeah. I think you got to give it to Ja. And you know, I know how you were saying, like, yeah, but this is a trajectory that he's expected to be on. But damn, did he take a major jump.
He did.
He took a major jump. And I think if it wasn't for injuries and missing as much time as he did, he would have definitely been in the MVP conversation. He finished the season only playing 57 games, but everything he did went up big time this season. His field goal attempts, his field goal percentage, I think he went from 44% to 49%. 3-point percentage, he went from 30% to 34%. His free throw percentage went up a little bit. He was assisting less, but that's only because he was scoring more. He went from 19 points a game to 27 points a game.
Jeez.
Like the jump is crazy. And again, the trajectory, this is something that Ja Morant could absolutely positively be doing as his career goes on. But the fact that he jumped that crazy from his sophomore year to junior year is pretty wild. And on top of doing all of that, he's a big reason why his team is the number two seed in the West. So I absolutely understand the argument for Darius Garland. You know, Jordan Poole can get a nod as well and probably some looks. But I think the fact that Ja Morant has such a big jump from sophomore season to junior season or his third year in the league, and then with that, he also elevated his team, that's big time for me. No. He definitely deserves the award this season.
Absolutely. I mean, what Ja has done, and the fact that he might be the most unguardable player in the league right now due to the fact that he has a shot. You know, he has a shot now, so teams don't know how to guard him. He has a great team. Josh could win it, and I wouldn't be mad at it at all. I'll give the edge to Garland. Another player, Mike, I think we should be mentioned, who's not gotten any of this talk, Robert Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Robert Williams, as Celtics fans, as homers as we are, that the transformation of Robert Williams is incredible. There was times where Robert Williams could not be on the floor if he was guarding a stretch four. He couldn't. His feet wasn't good enough. He was lost on defense. And the way he's transformed this year, and big kudos to Ime too, because he's figured it out. He doesn't put Robert Williams on the center. He puts him on the non-shooter, and the way they move their defenses and stuff, and Robert Williams has become a defensive monster. But his improvement to the fact that now he's an offensive weapon, he's a huge lob threat and helps out the Jays incredibly. I think he deserves some talks as most improved player as well. He won't win it, but he definitely deserves to be in the conversation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, Celtics fans will definitely tell you how greatly improved Robert Williams it has been this season compared to, you know, a season ago. But he's definitely low on the rankings in terms of most improved. I'm even thinking back to Ja. I know you was talking about how much of a great shooter he is. The one game I really got to watch Ja, because, you know, Memphis games, haven't caught too many of them like you. I know you're a big-time Memphis fan. The one game I saw him play and shoot, he shot terrible against the Celtics. I think he came on later on in the game.
He ended up with 30.
But yeah, the second half. But I remember that first quarter, first half, oh, my goodness, he was trash. And I was like, dang, Ja Morant, I know you're good, but damn, this is a poor showing for my first time seeing you. But again, overall, great season. Again, if he played more games, like if he was able to crack 65-plus games, 70 MVP games, talk. MVP talk. But the loss of all the games hurt him in that conversation. But most improved is something he should definitely go home with.
You think an MVP candidate should win most improved? So weird. It's just lack of games. It's just so weird.
Yeah,
you get demoted.
Yeah, pretty much. Because, yeah, if he played 70-something games, it's not a most – I mean, yeah, he could have that talk, but he's automatically catapulted to the MVP conversation.
Right. All right, let's get to the big leagues, man. let's get to the real stuff here. Defensive player of the year. I think this is one of the years that this is getting talked about more, as much or even more than the MVP. And because a lot of players are campaigning themselves, Marcus Smart's on a whole campaign trail of getting himself the Defensive Player of the Year award. And B came out and said only big men should win the Defensive Player of the Year. That sparked off a lot of talk. And then, you know, Gary Payton came on and was like, yo, guards deserve to be Defensive Player of the Year because of what they do. And it's become a battle. Should guards be known as Defensive Player of the Year or big men? And it's been madness. It's been crazy. But let's be real. And I hate saying this. If Draymond didn't get hurt, he was Defensive Player of the Year. We remember how crazy the Warriors started off this year with Draymond leading the pack, really. It was Draymond's award to lose. Draymond got hurt. Another clear winner, I think, in my opinion, was Bam Adebayo. Clear winner. Bam just didn't play enough games. Bam missed a lot of time. So that's when things started to get interesting. That's when the floodgates opened. It's like, well, if we're not going to give it to Draymond, Bam, maybe Bam will get some first votes. I think he deserves it. It's just lack of games. Who's going to be the next guy? You want to take this one, Mike?
This one's very hard. This one's very tough. As much as Marcus Smart is deserving of being looked at as the Defensive Player of the Year, I think one thing that is going to kill Marcus Smart, and this has kind of been the story of his career, he misses a lot of games every season. Like,
yeah.
when he plays, oh, he's great defensively for sure. When he plays, he's a beast defensively. But again, every year, Marcus Smart has some injury that puts him out for an extended period of time. What was the injury he had this year? I don't even remember.
It was the calf? It was his calf, right?
Something that had Marcus Smart out for a long period of time, because I remember he's out for a while. And then, like, when he came back, part of around the time he came back sparked the whole Celtics turnaround, because he came back and he was a beast.
He was about to be in trade talks.
Yeah. So let's not get it twisted. Marcus Smart is one hell of a defender. But the amount of games played is something that's going to be against him. And Draymond, yeah. Bam, yeah. Guys that are definitely deserving. But again, games played plays a part in it.
Yo, mind you, sorry to cut you off. Bam is a force.
Oh, Bam is great defensively. Yo,
watching him defensively, he's really a force.
And he's versatile, like, too. Versatile.
He's like 6'9", 6'10". Like, he's not a big dude. That dude, nah, he's a gem for Miami.
Versatile defensively. But, again, games played. So, maybe this is not a popular pick because this is a guy who's won it already. But he's available. His game hasn't changed. It's not like he took a step back defensively. He's still a beast defensively. I wouldn't be crazy to give the award to Giannis again. Again, there's other guys out there. I know I like you it. Got some. I have an idea of who you're probably going to say, possibly. But Giannis has continuously been a beast for the last 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 years. Giannis has been Giannis. Nothing's changed. And if anything's changed, you can say he's gotten better. I don't think anybody's looking at Giannis and saying he's declined in any way. Oh, he's taking a step back. No, every time you see Giannis, just this guy's a beast. This guy's nasty. So and offensively deep, like nothing has changed with his game. So I think sometimes with awards, it's not sometimes really popular to give somebody the award back to back, unless it's really clear cut. And Giannis has won the award once or twice. Giannis,
he won it and won the MVP the same year.
Yeah, so he won MVP in defensive. So it's not, you know, sometimes with awards, people want to look different ways after a guy has got it one time or maybe two times. So I understand that eyes are looking at different directions. But, yo, Giannis is a beast. You have another year where he's a defensive player of the year candidate and an MVP candidate. That says a lot about who the hell he is. So I wouldn't be mad. I wouldn't be upset seeing Giannis take home the award again, because, like I said, he hasn't fallen off with his play at all. He's still a beast. There's other guys who maybe finally now stepping up and showing out defensively, which is great. But this guy, Giannis, has been a consistent defensive player that is feared in the league.
Giannis is a great pick. Giannis is my number two. A great pick. And like, if you watched a game, an amazing game, Sixers versus Bucks, who makes the key stop on Embiid? It's Giannis. This is a guy who gives a damn. He cares. He on both ends. I love Giannis, and if he wins it, I'd be excited for it. Before I say my answer, who do you think I have in mind?
Jaren Jackson Jr.
Ah, that's my guy. It's not. I won't pick.
Okay.
That's my guy. He's third. He's third on my list.
Okay.
Triple J. I hope he gets the Defensive Player of the Year talks, because he definitely deserves it. Here's a guy who his problem with Triple J. His problem was he always gets in foul trouble. Just always gets in foul trouble. This year he's limited the fouls. Incredible defender, getting the bus, but he's another guy, just not enough time. It seems to be the way the NBA is going now, which sucks. Who I want to give the award to is Mikal Bridges. I think Mikal Bridges is the Defensive Player of the Year. Phoenix is the best defensive team in the NBA, or number one or number two. It's always been switching between Celtics and Phoenix. Mikal Bridges is the best defender. Mikal Bridges is taking everyone's best player and has been locking them up. That's what he's done quietly. The thing about wing defenders, and that's been the argument with guards, is you're not, the stats are not there, right? You're not going to see 11 defensive rebounds and two blocks a game. Those stats don't really go for players like that. But Mikal Bridges has been playing Kawhi-like defense for the Phoenix Suns, and I think he deserves to be the defensive player of the year. Look, it's wide open. Draymond should have won it, or Bam. But due to the time missed, it could go to anyone. I think my list goes Mikal, Giannis, JJJ, and Marcus Smart. I love Smart, Boston Celtic. You're being honest, man. That first half of the season, no one was – I didn't hear one person say Marcus Smart is the defensive player of the year.
I was saying he lost a step.
He lost a step. Marcus Smart looked like he slowed down. Yes. It looked like he slowed down defensively. He's turned it around and has definitely been playing like a defensive player of the year, 100%. But did not look like that in the beginning of the year. When I look at these awards, I'm looking at the whole year. And maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should switch that as we go on in the NBA and people are losing time and stuff. But right now, I look at the whole year, and I'm going to give it to Mikal Bridges. Hell of a defender. And, yeah, Giannis could easily win it. I like that pick a lot. Makes me want to reconsider, honestly.
All right.
Oh, boy.
The big one.
Here's the big shebang. And at first, I thought this was going to be an easy pick for me. I really did think it was going to be an easy pick. But then you just start looking. And it goes – can we both agree it's between three players?
Yes.
Embiid, Jokic, Giannis?
Yes.
Okay. For some reason, I can't eliminate Giannis. I just can't eliminate him, bro.
Here's what I'm going to say, man. And as wild as this race has been all year, I've been kind of – each guy has a great argument. But my head and my mind, my eyesight keeps going back to Joker. Joker is – what Joker does shouldn't be happening for a guy his size, a guy with his athleticism. Like, Giannis is dominant because he's just a physical specimen. He's a beast.
Right.
Embiid, same kind of thing. Physical specimen, beast. He got some speed. He got some handle, great strength. You know, he obviously got some leaping ability because he be getting some wild dunks here and there. But, like, the way Joker plays basketball with his speed, athleticism, it's like, how the hell are you doing this? Averaging 20-something points, averaging, 12-something rebounds, something like that. And he's up there with assists. That's pretty high for a big man. I don't know the exact assist number, but I tell you this. Jokic gets triple-doubles.
Best passing big man in the league.
Jokic gets triple doubles, and it's not like at this point it's something you expect from him each game he plays in. So a great argument, we said this about a couple of words, a great argument could be made for a couple different guys. But I just think the fact that Jokic is killing it, leading the team in points, leading the team in rebounds, leading the team in assists. And I'm sure Giannis is probably doing the same thing, most likely. But a guy, like I said, a guy with that athleticism, whatnot, it's somewhat to be expected. Driving down the lane, just jumping over people, dunking on people, you know, like that's just Giannis's game. Jokic is doing this stuff, and he's definitely not the fastest. Definitely strongest in terms of big men. I don't know. Maybe not the strongest. He definitely doesn't have no crazy leaping ability or whatnot and no super speed, but he's getting the job done. He's doing it without major help because you lost Michael Porter Jr., who's supposed to be a big part of that team. Still waiting for Jamal Murray to come back, who's supposed to be another major part of that team. Couldn't even tell you who the second best player on Denver is. Who is it? Will Barton? That's a good point. Might literally be Will Barton.
That's a good point.
Franco Camposo, like, what's that dude's name? Composite, something like that. I couldn't even tell you who the second, but it's Aaron Gordon. Like, Jokic is doing all of this with bums next to him, and his team is still in playoff contention. Like, I'm sorry. Giannis is doing everything, and this sucks sometimes because, again, you don't want to give the guy – sometimes you don't want to give a guy award again and again, but, like, Jokic is doing it with the least amount of help from – between Giannis and Embiid. Jokic has the least amount of help in terms of star power around him. Giannis has Middleton. Harden has Embiid has Harden, but he was doing it by himself before. But I don't know. Joker's my guy, man. His stats, what he's been able to do, where he's placed his team, the fact that he's been doing it by himself with no major help, Joker to me is going back to back.
My pick is Embiid. And they're all close.
Very close, yeah.
They're all close. So then you got to look. I got to look at, okay, if they're all close, who's the most dominant? It's Embiid. Embiid's the most dominant. His last 2 weeks, because they're all close, so you got to go by every game. His last 2 weeks, he's averaging 37 and 15.
Solid.
37 and 15. He's the first scoring champ as a center since Shaq. And look, this team was built to have him and Ben Simmons take them to the promised land. Didn't have Ben Simmons for the majority of the season. And then James Harden comes aboard, and James Harden's looking like, you know, after 14 years, Father Time is knocking on the door. It's been the Joel Embiid show, and he's been unstoppable. You could say the same thing with Giannis. You could say the same thing with Jokic. But then you got to look at the record. If it's between Jokic and Embiid, Embiid's got the better record, 51 and 31. Compared to, I think the Nuggets are 48 and 34. In the playoffs, teams are not going to be that afraid of just having Jokic do whatever they want, whatever he wants. Playoffs, teams are going to be looking to, okay, we got to do whatever we can to try to slow down Joel Embiid. Thing about Joel Embiid is, even if he's having a bad game, he's still going to get 30 because he's going to the foul line. He's gonna draw fouls. He's gonna get your best player in foul trouble. He does so much of the little things. And then at the end of the day, if Joel Embiid is a defensive presence on the court compared to Jokic, and that's why I gotta give the award to Embiid. He should have won it last year. Then he got hurt, and that ruined it. It should have been Embiid's award this year. Joel Embiid deserves it. Giannis is incredible. Like, you watch that dude Giannis, and it's like, damn, yo, he just doesn't let up. He doesn't let up.
Yeah, the thing with Giannis is, like, Embiid has stepped up even greater this year. Jokic just stepped up another year, but, like, Giannis is continuously dominant nonstop. Like I said, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years now, Giannis has just been a force, and he hasn't taken a step back in any way, shape, or form.
And his free throw percentage has gotten better. Like, Giannis is a problem, bro. Giannis is a problem. I'm gonna give it to Embiid.
Can't go wrong with any of them.
I really hope he wins it, though. I think Embiid wanted it. He deserves it. And yeah, man, that's the awards, bro. Those are our awards. We got a little bit of time left. I'm gonna let you take the floor, Mike.
Yeah, man, because we definitely got to talk about our friends over at BetOnline.ag. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, including updated odds on the playoffs, fights, and even next season's futures. And don't forget that baseball is back, and the start of the Major League Baseball season is finally here. BetOnline is your continued source for all sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started, so head over to the website today and use your mobile device to join and use our promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. So, yeah, let's get into our little second half here. Things popping off NBA-wise, the 2021-2022 season. And we got to talk some Celtics, man. Got to. It's a must. The NBA has been solid all year long. And if you're a Celtics fan, this has been one hell of a year. Obviously, you know, let's just get right to it because we don't want to spend too much time breaking down every single aspect. But obviously, coming into the season, you know, Brad Stevens steps up as the general manager. Danny Ainge is gone, new coach. And Brad Stevens made it clear. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are the pillars of the organization. They're going to do whatever they can to build around them for the future and hopefully, you know, put a championship team together. With all of that being said, you figured it's going to take some time. And with the moves that they made in the offseason, they didn't necessarily do anything crazy to say, hey, we have a championship team for this upcoming season. But obviously, they moved a little bit smarter. We're not keeping a bunch of young rookies, Carson Edwards and Trayvon Waters and Taco Fall and Semi Ojeleye, who wasted every minute he was on the court.
Come on, bro. Come on.
Like, Brad Stevens was clearly moving smarter with things. And the team he put together, adding in some more veterans, bringing back Horford, adding Schroeder, adding Josh Richardson. So to start the year, you would say, okay, well, it's the East, other than, you know, Brooklyn maybe and Milwaukee, you know, the East is somewhat wide open. Celtics could easily be up there in the standings, maybe a 5-4 seed, whatever the case may be. But let's be honest, they sucked the whole first half of the year. They definitely played way, way below the expectations, especially when you have two all-star players in Tatum Brown. They weren't living up to expectations. It was just a terrible, terrible start to the year. You know, injuries played a major part, guys, in and out of the lineup because of injuries and COVID and whatnot. But then the all-star break hit, and, you know, trade deadline happened. You make some moves. Schroeder gone. Add in Derek White, you bring back Tice, Josh Richardson gone. You get some guys back from injury. Smart comes back. Jaylen Brown comes back from dealing with his hamstring thing. I think Robert Williams was in and out for a little bit too. But you get guys back, you get guys healthy, you add in some new pieces. And my goodness, it was like watching a brand new team that just took off and started running. When I tell you they started running through teams, it's not like, okay, they put together one win, a nice win here, a nice win. I'm talking about back-to-back-to-back blowing out teams, winning 9 in a row, winning 8 in a row, just went on a freaking tear. All the way to, like I said earlier in the show, they reached a point where they were the number one seed for, I mean, it was a couple of days or something like that. But the fact that they were able to hit the number one seed was truly amazing. Ending off the season at the number two seed. But the fact that they went from, like you said, Marv, I believe they were 11th in the East all the way up to number two. Now they're looked at as one of the feared teams in the East. Tatum is now really taking that step into elite level. Brown is a solidified number two. Robin, like, okay, Tatum's going to get his, but Brown's going to give you some work too. You got two guys in Smart and Williams, Robert Williams, who are, you know, guys who are going to make probably all defensive teams. Then you got guys off the bench who really stepped up. Grant Williams, who I wanted off this team a long time ago, really, you know, helped improve his game. Pritchard getting minutes now is really shooting his shot and being clutch for the Celtics. Derek White is showing out to be a great acquisition for the team. Like, major turnaround, and this team has become very exciting to watch all over again. And a lot of that is due to, you know, trusting and believing and following what Coach Ime Udoka has brought to this team. I think they've really bought in, especially defensively. And not only defensively have they bought in, in terms of facilitating and moving the basketball, I think Tatum, Brown, Smart, all put up like career highs in terms of assists per game or something like that, I think I read. So shout out to the coach, shout out to the team, just making Celtics basketball exciting again.
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster. You broke it down incredibly how this season, that season outlook of the game. I think one thing to just mention, Peyton Pritchard stepping up with Dennis Schroeder being out the lineup. And then, well, now we're in a situation where Robert Williams is no longer on the team currently due to his meniscus, hoping to get him back sometimes in maybe round two. But to get through round two, potentially, you might have to go through the Brooklyn Nets. So let's start right here with this conversation. Brooklyn Nets are looking like they're knocking on the door to being the seventh seed. They face the Cleveland Cavaliers as we are recording tomorrow night on April 12th, 7 p.m. It's going to be Cleveland Cavaliers versus the Nets to see who faces Boston. I think we all pretty much think it's going to be Brooklyn. It's not guaranteed, but let's say it is Brooklyn. I've been seeing it, Mike. We've been having this conversation for the past couple days. Celtics fans are very bold right now. Celtics fans feel good. You know, the season has been amazing. The past 2-3 months have been great. Defensively, Celtics are on fire. They even had a hell of a game against the Brooklyn Nets with Kyrie playing, where they beat the Nets. Hell of a game. Now you're going to have to face the Nets in the first round. And, you know, at first, everyone knows this. It's not ideal. But now people are talking like Celtics about to run through the Nets and everything's going to be fine and dandy. I'll be rooting for the Cleveland Cavaliers as a Celtics fan.
Shock the world. Shock the world.
I would love for Nets to be Miami's problem in the first round, not ours. Do I believe the Celtics could beat the Nets? Of course I do. I think they can beat the Nets. But here's my thing, Mike, and I spoke this to you earlier. This is not great. Not having Robert Williams facing the Brooklyn Nets is not a great matchup. The two times that you've beaten the Nets, you've needed a 50-point game from Jason Tatum. We can't ignore that. You needed 50 points from Jason Tatum to beat the Nets. Jaylen Brown wasn't up to par during that last Nets game, and Jaylen Brown wasn't there in the playoffs the last time you played the Nets. So now you have JB who's been hot as of late. But say you do get past the Nets, which we believe, I think it might go 6 or 7. You got home court advantage. You could beat them. Who's going to be knocking at the door? Milwaukee Bucks. They got the sucky-ass Chicago Bulls, I believe, that they're about to fit. That game, that series is not going more than 5. Giannis is going to beat the breaks out of Chicago. It's not. You got Drew Holiday. He's going to take out either DeRozan or LaVine. It's not going to be long. Milwaukee's going to be well-rested, waiting for the Celtics, who are going to go through a damn war against the Brooklyn Nets. And that's my issue. It's not that, oh, I'm afraid of the Nets and the Nets are big. Yeah, Kevin Durant's a scary dude. And I just have a hard time believing Kevin Durant is going to falter in the first round of the playoffs. We've seen what that man can do. Did we not watch the playoffs last year? It was because of a big toe that they got eliminated by Milwaukee. Durant's a monster. I almost swore. I almost said effing monster. Durant's a monster. He's a force. Like, the dude can do whatever he wants on the court. And yes, I don't like that. But Celtics can handle their own because they are a better team. But if you're going to go through the Nets, Milwaukee, and most likely Miami to go to the finals, golly, that is an incredibly tough road. Because you got to exert all your energy in the first round. And I don't know, man. It's not going to be easy.
So, yeah, I mean, I get it. You look at that. It could be a very tough road to the finals for the Celtics. Very tough. And, you know, I'm not even trying to look that far ahead right now. Let's start with what's ahead of us. And like you said, it potentially could be Brooklyn. Now, if Cleveland shocks the world and gets a win in Brooklyn Tuesday night, great for them. Happy for them. It'd be also good for the Celtics because it's just a better matchup. But if we do, if the Celtics do get Brooklyn, my thing is with the Brooklyn Nets, I understand they have two players in Kyrie and KD that can easily get 30, 40. After those two players, like Brooklyn's not a good defensive team. Like their big man is Drummond, who's never been known to be any type of defensive stopper. And then behind Drummond is Claxton. Ain't nobody give a damn about Claxton in the paint. So already right there, you're not worried about solid defense coming, interior defense coming from Brooklyn. After that, they're just not a good defensive team. They'll get put up points because of KD and Kyrie, but they're not a good defensive team. Celtics has been a team that's been putting up 110, 115, 120 in a lot of these games during their stretch. So they can get buckets too. So if you're talking about two teams, yeah, the Brooklyn Nets can get buckets because of two guys. Celtics can get buckets because Tatum and Brown go off, but Smart's chipping in. White's chipping in. Pritchard's chipping in. Grant Williams is chipping in. Horford's chipping in. So you're getting a lot of additional points next to Tatum and Brown, which is something that sometimes you're not getting from Brooklyn. Like KD and Kyrie go off. Now you're hoping that Drummond can get some second chance points and offensive rebounds.
Their key is Seth.
He's healthy.
Seth needs to be healthy for
yes. Brooklyn. Seth is like their third best option. Patty Mills has struggled all year. Bruce Brown is not a threat. They don't have a lot of major threats over there after KD and Kyrie. And then again with the Celtics, you're talking about a team that's been the number one, number two defensive team in the league for the last 2-3 months. So when I look at this potential matchup against Brooklyn, do I feel like the Celtics, because they've been playing out of their mind, we're talking the best team in the league over the last, do I say, oh, the Celtics, they've been playing so good, they're so hot, they're just going to run through Brooklyn? No, I'm not saying that. Am I saying that, oh, boy, KD, Kyrie, two top 10 players in the league, Celtics got to deal with them. It's going to be real slow for Boston Celtics. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is a lot of talk with Brooklyn has been, okay, if they get Kyrie and KD healthy, they're possibly a title contender. Like, and I'm not knocking Brooklyn at all. KD and Kyrie, that's two beasts that any team has to deal with. What I'm saying is it's a good test for Boston. And not only is it a good test for Boston, but I don't feel as if they're in over their heads because they're dealing with two of the greatest scorers we've seen in this league's history. It's going to be a test. If you can get through Brooklyn somehow, you possibly have another beast waiting for you in the second round. And I'm not even trying to think that far ahead. But all I'm saying is I know there was talk on social media, whatnot. I've seen tweets. Oh, my goodness. Avoid Brooklyn by all costs. Avoid Brooklyn by all costs because – and people are – you're saying that because you're scared of Kyrie and Kevin Durant. But my thing is those two are great, but I don't fear that team. Now, this – if James Harden wasn't such a – whatever you want to call him, and he stuck it out and just tried to stay strong in Brooklyn and waited for KD to come back from his injury and waited for eventually what happened with Kyrie's situation and him being cleared for home games, if James Harden just waited around and then you're going up against this playoff series against Harden, Kyrie, and Durant, now that's a different story. That's something that I'd be like, okay, it's something to be fearful of. I know there's potential talk of Ben Simmons coming back, maybe playing limited minutes or whatnot, but to me, that don't honestly make a difference. I know Ben Simmons is a solid player defensively, but like offensively, I don't think he's necessarily adding too much to what Brooklyn is doing. All I'm saying is it's going to be a good matchup and a great test for a young Boston Celtics team. When I say young, I mean is like Kyrie has a championship, KD has a championship, so they know what it takes to get there. Tatum and Brown have been close. They haven't got there yet. So I think it's a nice matchup. And it could possibly go to distance. I'm talking seven games, slugfest. It could come down to KD and Kyrie versus Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And if that's what it comes down to, yeah, you're automatically giving that nod to Kyrie.
You better hope it doesn't come down to that.
I'm saying if it does come down to that, that'd be great, but then after a while, it's going to be like, okay, but who has those random guys on the team stepping up and giving their team that extra something? And I think that's where Boston has an edge over the Brooklyn Nets.
My thing is this. JB needs to be on every game. Every game, JB needs to be on. This is your chance. You weren't in the playoffs last year. Kyrie's going to be on every game against Boston. KD, we're not even going to have that conversation. Like Tatum dropped 50 that last game. KD looked just as good with his 38, 37 points, whatever he had. He looked just as unstoppable. JB needs to be on. This is a test for JB right here. You have to perform. In these playoffs here, you have to go tit for tat with Kyrie, because if you don't, the Celtics will get bounced in the first round. I mean, will anyone be shocked or surprised? Not really. I mean, I think Nets have a good chance to go to the finals. Everyone believes that due to the firepower of those two men. But Celtics should win because of everything you said of having the better overall team. But having the better overall team means JB needs to be that guy.
Yeah.
I think he can. But he needs to show it here.
I agree.
It comes down to JB. I think JT has earned us where we were like, we know JT is going to step up. He's earned that from us. I think we don't even need to talk about it. He's solidified as who he is as a star. And we know JT is going to be JT. But this game's in the playoffs where JT might have struggled scoring. JB, that's on you. Will you be able to do that? That's what remains to be seen, man. And then, you know, if Celtics do lose, there's going to be a lot of talk on, damn, did they make the right decision of going all out? And beating Memphis, and it's going to be all the stuff. I'm all for not pissing off the basketball gods and trying to duck like what Milwaukee did. I'm hoping it bites them in the ass. It probably won't. I remember like the Clippers did that last year with ducking Los Angeles Lakers, and it worked out for them. They went to the conference finals. It's just that Kawhi got hurt, and the rest was history for them. But don't duck. One thing about the Celtics that's encouraging, they're not afraid. They've all been talking that talk. They're ready for the moment. But you can talk that talk. Now it's about to walk that walk. I have a hard time in my head just seeing KD walk off losing in the first round. It's just a hard image to see. But Celtics is going to have to try to do it.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be the first time the Celtics are going into a playoff series, into the playoffs, where you know for a fact it's the Tatum and Brown show. Last year, no Brown. The year before that, which was with the bubble year, you was hoping that you got a combination of Tatum, Brown, and Kemba. The year before that, another combination of Tatum, Brown, Kemba, I believe. the year before that. Now we're getting back into the Kyrie and Hayward.
Yeah, please.
This is going to be the first year where it's like, okay, Tatum and Brown, it's your team. How far can you take them? Tough matchup possibly in the first round. I'm going to stop right there. But this, again, I'm happy that Tatum and Brown are both healthy going into the playoffs. Like I said, this is going to be the first true year. It was supposed to be last year, but Brown got hurt. But this is going to be the first true year. It's like, all right, Tatum, Brown, how far can you take this team? And believe me, like, even if the Celtics don't go far or lose, like, I don't necessarily feel like – I still believe overall Brad Stevens has this team headed in the right direction in terms of how he's building the team. Bringing in the right pieces, veterans. I still think if you can get another third solid scoring option, don't necessarily have to be a superstar or anything. I like how this team is trending. But, you know, we focused in on this year right now. And the fact that this team has had such a crazy turnaround where they're one of the best teams in the league, you know, we'll see how far what this team can do and how far they can go, led by Tatum and Brown. So I'm excited to see it, man. I'm just happy that, yeah, Robert Williams is out. Hopefully you'll get him back soon. But for the most part, everybody is healthy. Robert Williams is somebody who should be coming back soon, hopefully. But we're not going into, like, I feel like the last 2, 3, 4 years, you're going into the playoffs where somebody's ruled out for the rest of the year. Don't even look for them again. It's over for them. That was Brown last year. That was whoever the year before that. Like, the Celtics continue to deal with it. This is the first year they're going into the playoffs where everybody's fully healthy. Robert Williams is somebody who should hopefully be returning, but it's a clean bill of health for the most part. And that's what's key for this team. And they just got to keep the same mindset that they've had the last 2, 3, 4 months.
Yeah. We're going to end it off right there, man. NBA Awards, Celtics talk. If you are watching this, it's probably the day of the play-in or a little after that. And we could look like fools because maybe the Nets lost and it's Cleveland we're facing.
Cleveland might shock the world.
And then we'll be very excited, and that will go only 5 games. I tell you that. So maybe Cleveland gets one. Maybe.
Hey, man, you just hyped up Darius Garland, man.
Garland's nice. He can. Hey, I said if you were a star, what'd I say? They got to get you one. Tatum got us one last year. You got to get you one if you're a star. Stars can win you one basketball game in the playoffs. I truly believe it. So this is Double M Live. That's Mike Nice. My name is Marvin Azan. We are powered by Bet Online AG. April 15th, 100th episode, live audience, a celebration with Mike Nice and I and the whole Double M family. We want to see y'all there. We'll have it live streamed and all that beautifulness. But until then, enjoy the play-ins. We'll see you guys in the playoffs.
Peace.